everyone. Welcome to the podcast. I'm here today with Rocco Mijic. How do you say your last name?
Mijic. It's Croatian.
It's Croatian. Okay. And you're from the UK?
That's correct, yes.
Okay. Can you introduce yourself to the audience, Rocco?
Great. Thanks. So I am, I guess, a minor niche internet celebrity famous for prognosticating about the future of artificial intelligence going back as far as 2008-ish. My background is mathematics, physics, into AI and data science, and I also have a sort of passing interest in trading and cryptocurrency.
Okay. So what do you do for work? What's your like job? You're a minor.
Right now I'm consulting for people on various sort of private projects, but I am looking to expand soon, but I don't want to talk about that before it happens.
Okay, cool. So I just want to say thank you, Rocco, for telling me to invest in Dogecoin. Thank you for being on the podcast, but thank you for telling me to invest in Dogecoin. Let me see how much it's gone up since you told me that. It is up. I have gained 35% return. You told me maybe 8 days ago. 8 days ago to buy it. So that's an excellent return. I don't think you.
Personally, I'm up 100%, and I just took pretty heavy profits today. I sold 66% of my position. The reason being that I feel like it's a little bit too consensus of a trade now. I think it'll go a lot higher though. Like, I think if you just leave it on Coinbase and forget about it for 5 years, it's almost certainly going to be a lot higher. If you're interested
in short-term trading,
I took massive profits. I put some into Ethereum, which is more of a, mainstream choice, shall we say? And also some into Litecoin.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, I've invested a bit in cryptocurrency thanks to advice from you and Anatoly and some other people. And it's always that their advice has been good of what I've taken it. But I don't understand what I'm doing. And so, you know, I think we should talk about that in a little bit. I'm curious. I'm happy to just follow you guys because you've given good advice thus far. But you're known for your work on AI. You come out of the Less Wrong, Eliza Yudkowsky sort of milieu, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
And you're most famous for a thought experiment called Rocco's Basilisk. And I'll just say before, if you, this is a kind of argument that I don't know. You took the other job. I looked up some of the discussion about it. And apparently some people think if you hear this argument, it makes you more likely to be forever tortured. So if being forever tortured by for an all powerful AI sounds like a plausible outcome to you, if that's something that you think is plausible and you don't want to face that future, you might want to stop listening now.
Just to be clear, I don't think that is particularly likely.
Okay, he doesn't think it's likely.
Far more likely that it doesn't do anything.
Yeah. Okay.
And if it does do something, it's far more likely that it does something else.
Okay,
that's the version of it that really captured people's imagination.
Yeah, so you can fast forward like 10 minutes if you are skittish or scared of these things.
Yeah, that's true. Some people seem to freak out. I've received a report that somebody threw themselves out of a window because of it.
No way, really? Yes. A report confirmed? Did you confirm it?
Well, I mean, people have just told me this, right? That somebody was high on drugs and they couldn't stop thinking about it and they threw themselves out of a window.
Okay. If you're on acid, you might wanna listen to this podcast
tune
later.
Definitely tune out.
Okay, so explain the idea.
How do you want the short version or the long version? Are we talking like 3 minutes or are we talking like 15 minutes?
We can go, I don't know, 5 minutes, I don't know,
okay,
something
we'll
like
do
that.
The short version. So the short version is around about 2010. A group of people online, Robin Hanson, Eliezer Yudkowsky, myself, many others, were talking about the possibility of strong artificial intelligence on the Overcoming Bias blog, which then sort of split off into the Less Wrong website.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that Hansen's blog was the original.
It was the original. The first parts of Eliezer's rationality series were on Overcoming Bias. I am OG enough to have read the first ones on Overcoming Bias.
Mm-hmm.
We were worried that strong AI was going to happen within our lifetimes with reasonably high probability, and it turns out that that's now vindicated. And within those sort of worries was the possibility that rather than happening in the future, it could already have happened and we could be living inside a simulation. And I came up with the idea that, well, if we're living inside a simulation built by people after the singularity, maybe it's built because those people after the singularity want to do some kind of loyalty test on us or do some kind of incentivize us to behave in certain ways. And one way is you could just have an AI system which runs simulations of the past and rewards people who bring it into existence or punishes people who try to stop its existence, right? And this idea, so the idea of a simulation argument it's not mine. That's due to Nick Bostrom. The idea of this kind of a causal sort of influence where you run a simulation and then you use the simulation to incentivize somebody because they don't know whether they're in the simulation or in reality. That's not my idea either. That comes from a paper called, I think it's called Defeating Dr. Evil. Let me see if I can look it up. Defeating Dr. Evil. Defeating Dr. Evil with Self-Locating Belief is a paper that was published by Adam Elgar. And I want to say it's in the 90s, but let me see if I can find it.
It's okay. So, people can look up the paper later.
Yeah. So Defeating Dr. Evil, 2004, Adam Elgar, Defeating Dr. Evil with Self-Locating Belief. So, you know, his paper from 2004 basically says, imagine you had a bad guy, a supervillain who has a death ray built on the moon, and he says, if you don't give me full control over the world, I'm going to use my death ray to blow the world up, right? And there's no military option to defeat Dr. Evil, but you do have a computer simulation that's indistinguishable from reality that you can build on Earth. So what you do is you build a whole bunch of these simulations which simulate Dr. Evil and his death laser and the moon and all of this stuff. And then you say to him, we're going to present this situation to the ones in the simulation. And those who decide to blow Earth up and, you know, commit this sort of massive sort of genocide or whatever, we'll punish them. We'll give them a prison sentence, away, right? Or, you know, tickle them to death. I don't know, whatever, right? So because Dr. Evil can't locate himself, right? He doesn't know whether he's the real one or whether he's in the simulation. He can be credibly deterred, even though you don't have a real military option against.
Okay, so Dr. Evil, let me make sure I understand. Dr. Evil is sitting there, and you're saying we're going to create a million simulations of Dr. Yes. Evil, and Dr. Evil says, "Am I the real Dr. Evil? Yes, in which case, exactly. I should blow up the world, or yes. am I one of the probability wise, I would be one of the simulation because there are it's infinite regress. They're going to make more Dr. Evil simulation versions." And so he doesn't blow up the planet. Okay, that's the argument. Yeah.
So a lot of the building blocks are not unique to me, but what my unique contribution is to say, look, this Defeating Dr. Evil situation is actually applicable to the situation we're in now, where we seem to find ourselves in a period just before the creation of a powerful superhuman intelligence in the singularity. And therefore, we should expect that there is some probability that whoever could be, you know, whoever might exist after the singularity will start doing these Defeating Dr. Evil with Self-Locating Beliefs type simulations. And that is, in fact, probably the most important type of simulation. So Nick Bostrom came up with a simulation argument, but I think this is the most important application of it.
So the Dr. Evil in this scenario is humans?
It's us, and, yeah. It's you and me, right.
And,
the AI in the future wants us to do something, but we don't know exactly what. So one possibility is it just wants us to create it. But create what? There are many different versions of it. So the version that I sort of propose, I mean, I didn't propose this as a sort of serious proposal. It's just a footnote. It's just mentioned in passing, right? So there are many different equilibria you could have here, right? Because it's unclear exactly what you're supposed to do, because it's unclear what, how does this really work out, right? I mean, if we are in a simulation, how do we know what the real, future is actually like, right? So we have to have some kind of probability distribution over that. The whole thing gets very complicated. So I mean, if you're interested in engaging with this seriously, it turns out that it's really quite complicated. It's there are many, many unknowns that are hard to pin down beyond the basic argument of, this is probably happening.
Okay. What was the reaction to this? So this caused a huge it was a huge ruckus among the Less Wrong.
This caused a ruckus on Less Wrong because Eliezer was not happy that I'd gone public with this. He was like, look, this is potentially very dangerous. You shouldn't have told anyone. And I'm like, well, I only mentioned it in passing. And then sort of he got very mad very publicly with me on the site. And unfortunately, this unleashed the Streisand effect, where when you try to cover something up, it supercharges its
violence. You have reached the end of the free recording for this episode of Clown Car. To listen to the rest of the episode, please consider becoming a paid subscriber.